Wish I could remember that quote from Back to the Future. Like, when'd you get into port or whatever, when he's making fun of Marty McFly for wearing the life preserver or whatever. Dang it.
Oh, I thought he was asking, like, when did you become interested in liquor? Like, when'd you get into port?
Oh, yeah. Pour on. Dude, port wine with a little dark chocolate. So good.
Yes. I wonder if it's so named because it came from the sea or something.
I don't know. Isn't it just, like,
got it
aged?
In.
I don't know.
You picked it up at the port. I don't know.
Ayo.
You drink it with your left hand.
Was port the left side of the boat?
Yes.
Nice.
Eh, boat humor.
All right. The warm-up lap. Welcome back to Switchcast Season 5. I am your host, Doug Tabbitt, with my co-host, Tyler Sanders. We're the automotive news and entertainment show that's not just for car people. You wouldn't know this because only the audio podcast people get this wonderful introduction, but I am trying to look at the camera while I'm doing this introduction, and I don't even need to, but, you know, it's good practice. Ethan Huffnagel is our executive assistant to the regional producer, and tonight we're going to talk about, well, cars. The first topic we want to get into is salvage cars. On a live Ooh. Show a long time ago, with Tim Neely,
yes.
One of the viewers asked us, is it worth it to buy like a rebuilt title, salvage car, flood car, whatever? And that was a very great question. We're going to unpack that a little bit, but also look at one of the big salvage auction scams or salvage vehicle scams that happens that makes the whole thing about buying a rebuilt title car more risky.
Seems like there's scams everywhere, Doug. Scams all over the place. There's money to be made. Somebody's going to scam.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's not just the automotive industry. The automotive industry is kind of the Wild West compared to a lot of other industries. Not a ton of regulation. So I think it's more ripe for scams. But,
It's also just a lot more money. And if somebody's thinking they can save a buck, they get really excited at the possibility of owning such car for, you know, a massively reduced price.
Indeed. Indeed. And I will give a plug right off the bat for a company called Epic VIN. I've been using them for a lot of my research, and this is how I've uncovered a lot of these scams. We endorse them now. Click the affiliate link in the show notes to check them out. If you're a car dealer, if you buy cars on a regular basis, you cannot be without Epic VIN. You cannot. Carfax leaves so much on the table, so little information comparatively or relevant information, especially on high-end cars. They have been invaluable. I've been a subscriber for years, and it's freaking $40 a month, which one Carfax report is $40.
Seriously.
So there's no reason not to have it if you buy more than two cars a year. But anyway, let's talk about the real issues. So let's start out with the line we've all heard. It's kind of like when you see a race car for sale or a track car and people say, it's ready to race. And you're like, no, probably needs new brakes and new axles and an engine and gearbox refresh. That's the interpretation of ready to race.
Needs everything.
Right. It's like when you ask your wife what's wrong and she says nothing. That means we need marriage counseling.
Figure it out. Whoa.
Ready to race is the same version of a woman saying, nothing's wrong. Everything's fine.
Yeah.
The salvage title equivalent of that is somebody selling a rebuilt title car, and they're like, it was just a little bit of damage. It was cosmetic. It was just the front bumper, but they, you know, they totaled it out.
Yeah, dude, you see that so much. The like, I was like hit. It was, you know, maybe a fender bender, but they just totaled it out. For it's like, you don't get totaled for a fender bender.
Well, if you have a Pontiac G8, you do, because the parts are so hard to find and so expensive. Absolutely.
Wow.
Absolutely. There are some cars, and during COVID, this was an issue too, just because of the supply chain holdups. People, the insurance companies would total out cars that didn't really need it. So that was kind of a place and time exception. But yes, we do see often people describing cars as just a little tiny bit of damage. Anecdotally, though, I will say every now and then that is true. And there's weird technicalities that cause this to be true. And one that I remember vividly is a yellow Ferrari 360 Challenge Stradale that ran over an object on the highway in California. And it basically just like punched a hole in the floorboard. And because that's considered part of the frame, the integral structure, whatever California's laws were, the insurance company had to total it out. So that car got a rebuilt title because of a hole in the floorboard. That's a car I would love to own, because I'm like, I will totally take the R title discount for that.
Yeah.
There's no impact. There's no ongoing issues. There's no electrical issues. There's no water damage. Like,
it
so
didn't
what?
Get like twisted, you know?
No.
But I do think, no. So, okay. I think a lot of people believe, or they want to believe, that the car they found that they're super excited about that is rebuilt is that situation. Oh, it was just a fender. Oh, it was just superficial. They like want to believe this, even though there could like the risk is so high if they get something that is actually messed up.
Okay. That's valid. And I think that's why normal car scams continue to perpetuate. It's the same logic of, I know it sounds too good to be true, but maybe this is the one deal that isn't.
Okay. Everybody thinks they're the exception. Have you told me that before?
Yes. Yes, I have. Okay, so basic advice, should we or should we not buy rebuilt title cars? And I think in general, there's a law of diminishing returns. It's kind of like, and we've talked about this before, should you buy the cheapest car on the market? Not usually, because you spend 10% more and you get the best one on the market.
Yeah, it only works if you have a YouTube channel.
Yes, and that's made it actually worse for the people trying to buy the cheapest cars on the market, because all the project cars have gotten driven up in value by all the YouTubers trying to get content. Not us. We just pontificate. We don't, yeah, we don't wrench. And there's also the principle that the whole is worth less than the sum of its parts, right? So if you take a brand new car and parted it out at dealer list price for the parts, it would be worth far more than the car itself. So the converse of that is, if you buy a $50,000 car that needs $100,000 restoration, it'll be worth $80,000 when you're done. Yeah. Same thing with most R title cars, or cars that need significant work. You buy one for a 50% discount. So $100,000 car you buy for $50,000. Oh man, it needs $40,000 in repairs. Okay, so now you're in at $90,000 for a rebuilt title car. You could have bought a good one for $100,000, and the discount for a properly fixed rebuilt title car, just because it has a scar on the history, is like 25%, give or take. More for like super high-end cars, less for like a Toyota Camry, but average of around 25%. So it's like you got to be in it $75,000 after you're done. And a lot of people don't think about this when they're thinking about buying it. But what people will do, so there's the retail scam, right? So dealers will buy a car at auction, fix it cheap enough to pass safety inspection, and convert the salvage title to a rebuilt title, and that's an important distinction. So when a car gets wrecked, it gets a salvage certificate in most states. And that means this car is wrecked, cannot sell it to a retail customer, cannot register it on the road. The difference between a salvage title and rebuilt title, and people use these terms interchangeably and they should not, is a rebuilt title means the car has been rebuilt, inspected by the highway patrol or whatever governing agency allows it to go back on the road. They deem it roadworthy, and then they say, yes, okay, this car can be sold, can be registered for use on the street. So salvage dealers will buy salvage title cars, fix them on the cheap, and then sell them to retail customers saying, oh, it's just superficial damage. This goes back to Epic VIN. If you have Epic VIN, most of the time you can go back because they have historical archived photos and listings from like Copart and other, you know, IAAI, and they will have those old photos. So you can actually look and see if the guy's hoodwinking you or if it actually had significant damage.
Shouldn't that show up on Carfax though?
Maybe. Yeah, it might say, okay, well, it had a rebuilt title, but it's, you don't know anything about why.
That's true. The photos would be pretty huge.
Yeah. Yeah. And sometimes they'll say, well, here is the damage reported based on the police report, but that's not even always accurate because I totaled a car and it came up on Carfax as airbags not deployed. So one would think, oh, that's just minor damage. I sent Carfax pictures of the accident showing the airbags deployed. And they're like, oh, sorry, you have to submit a police report or like amend that in order for us. And I'm like, I was in the car. Here's the pictures. The airbags were deployed. So Carfax is not even always accurate on that stuff. So you want to use multiple avenues of due diligence when you're researching this stuff. The crazier scam is the salvage to salvage scam. So I've come across this so many times where I will see somebody post like, oh, here's the damage. It was fairly light. And so I'll go back through and I'll search Epic VIN and I'll search through the historical auctions and I'll see one auction from April with the damage photos that the selling dealer is putting forth. I'm like, okay, that doesn't look too bad. And then 2 months earlier, it went through the same salvage auction and looked way worse.
Whoa.
Way worse.
Did they only, did they like fix it partway or was it a different accident?
Ah, that's it.
Okay.
Fix it partway. It's, you know, it's like old washed up Hollywood people getting some plastic surgery. And all of a sudden you're like, wait a minute, what happened? I just saw them in a movie. So they'll, and we'll put some photos up for those of you watching on the video on the audio podcast. I'm sorry. You're just going to have to use your imagination, but I'll see the photo and I've seen one. Some of the worst ones I've seen are like roof damage, front end ripped off, wheels missing, headlights missing. The hood is just crunched in half. And then 2 months later, what they'll do is they'll hammer out all the big dents. So there's one like there was structural issues in the A pillar and C pillar, right? And they just like hammered those out. They put a windshield in and a rear window, so you couldn't tell that glass was shattered.
Okay.
They put a new hood on. It didn't fit. It didn't close because they didn't actually fix the frame. They put headlights in and they would put a wheel on. So like what was a car that wasn't even rolling now like at least looked like a roller and looked reasonably straight.
And somebody could look at that and be like, well, the windshield didn't break, like, and yada, yada. Yeah. Okay, maybe the hood's not closing. The car
is bent.
Yeah, like it's probably fine.
And it's bent. Yeah. Yeah, and they'll like they'll stuff the airbags back into the seats
tape them closed.
No, they just kind of like zip tire, you know, so you can still tell the airbags went off, but it's just like they're trying to just hide it. So I mean, that's like the biggest red flag to me is like, oh, somebody tried to clean this up.
That's so sketchy.
Yeah.
So you're saying there's like people in the business of taking completely totaled cars, sort of fixing them, selling them back to the salvage auction.
Yes.
That is wild.
Yes. And then the dealer that fixes them all the way, maybe well or maybe not well at all, will buy them and say, oh, it's just minor damage, just a little cosmetic damage, put it up for sale. And if they're trying to be transparent, they'll say, oh, look, these are the photos from the auction. Well, but those are the photos from the second auction.
It's like washing an accident.
Yeah.
Washing a total.
Ooh. Yes. Yeah. So be careful out there, people.
Yikes.
I'm not the guy that likes buying salvage title cars. Ed Bullion is. I don't see it as worth it almost all the time. But except for that yellow 360 Challenge Shadali, which I still want to find again.
Stick shift in there. It'd be great.
Yes. Ooh. I don't like yellow cars, but I like a yellow Challenge Shadali. So anyway, better advice is just to buy a really good car. Perform your due diligence, but don't just rely on Carfax. again, another plug for Epic VIN and also VINWiki, which is totally free. Sometimes people will post pictures there, third party, of an accident or something, or mods that the car had on it or something like that. So use all available resources, social media, Googling the VIN, everything you possibly can do to get the backstory on a car, whether or not it's a rebuilt title, but especially when it's a rebuilt title. And don't take the, it's just a flesh wound at face value. Never.
It's but a scratch.
It'll buff out.
It'll be fine. It's the same thing. Like Ranwin Park needs nothing, just needs a battery. It's the same. It's like, well, who are you trying to fool?
Right. Right. Like kit cars. Yes. It just needs this. Yeah. I've got the fuel pump right here.
That's all it needs.
No. Verify for yourself. Always, always, always verify for yourself. Okay. We have a mean tweak. Mean tweak is our mean tweet of the week, shortened down, just like Switch Cars Podcast was shortened to Switchcast. We're a big fan of compressing here.
Including our table.
Our producer, Ethan, has a mean tweak, which is something terrible that somebody said about me, usually. Sometimes Tyler's
sometimes
hair.
Sometimes me.
There was somebody did say about you, and they dirty deleted it. I was so bummed.
Because I'm just that great. No, I'm not.
Yeah.
We don't need to.
Anyway.
Somebody's already told me I look like I wear like a wig. So that was fantastic.
Well, that was a good one. This happened on the rocker panel 40K. You spent 40K on a new rocker panel, or you thought you were going to have to, YouTube short.
Yep.
So this is Doug talking about an Aston Martin. And the comment was, holy crap, Jack Doherty's selling cars now.
Nice.
And I keep my shirt on.
Yeah, that was Doug's like, masterful.
Come on.
No, so I keep good. My shirt
I don't,
on.
So number one, until we covered Jack Doherty's wreck in his McLaren, I didn't know who Jack Doherty was. I had to look it up. I'm like, oh, some tool bag wrecked his McLaren while live streaming. Who is this guy? Oh, ew.
I had to look it up again when you showed me this comment because I had already forgotten.
Yeah. But apparently somebody equates me with that hardly post-pubescent man-child that likes walking around with his shirt off talking about how crypto-rich he is and leverage and all that. So, anyway, I don't get the insult, but...
They tried.
Okay. I don't shave my chest either. I don't even think he has to shave his chest.
No,
he's
I think
just
that's
like...
Just how it is.
That's just how it is, yeah. Shrewd Negotiator, one of our favorite weekly recurring ones. This is a great one. Somebody's trying really, really hard to sell their car. This is some real negotiations. Posted in the Cheap Cars in Delaware group on Facebook. Cat Valentine starts out, "Hi, please no negative comments."
Well, let's go.
Sorry you posted it on Facebook.
Yeah, seriously.
I can guess what kind of car she had, too. All right, here she goes. "I know no one probably can't do this, but I'll ask anyways. So I have $600 for a down payment right now. I'm looking for a reliable car that is 0 to 89,000 miles, automatic, no accidents, $0 to $4,000.
I appreciate the ranges. You know, it helps people kind of figure out what she's looking for, but starting at zero is a bit.
Yes.
On both of those is a bit strange.
Dave Ramsey thinks you can buy a running driving car for $1,000 or $1,500. I disagree. I'm not even sure if you can get a sub 89,000 mile reliable car for $4,000. Yeah, so off the bat, she's stretching. But anyway, it gets worse. I mean, better. Also,
Doug, keep it together.
Also, I can't go through a bank because my car was just repossessed. I was paying on a car that was not worth the amount I was paying, so I surrendered it. It's not I couldn't pay, it's just it was not worth the amount. I tried trading it, but it was $12,000 negative, so no one wanted it. LOL.
That's not how loans work. That, like, well, this guy's put up the technical difficulty sign here. Ethan. I can play some Jeopardy music or something. You doing all right over there, Doug?
I'm fine.
You were just really trying to grapple.
I'm fine.
Yeah, that's not how loans work.
No negative comments, Tyler.
Oh, I'm sorry.
She said it up front.
I disobeyed the rules.
Yeah, we all know surrendering and repossession, it doesn't make repossession go away. And yeah, they're like, still going to sue you for the difference.
And how do you
upside down?
How do you surrender it? Do you take it to the bank and just throw the keys on like a teller's counter and say, "Man, here you go," or do you just like let the repo man take it?
Both. So a lot of times they just drop it off at the dealer. Like if it's a buy here, pay here, they might just like take it in and think that, "Oh, well, you'll just take the car back." No, they're going to come after you. They are going to sue you. So maybe you should just save up a little more and just pay cash for a car, you know, take that $600 and put it all on black or something like that. But
you said a pretty responsible thing and a very not responsible thing there in the same sentence there.
I'm sorry. It was my disbelief that this person can actually save $4,000. So it doesn't seem like they're making good choices right off the bat. But any guesses? I don't actually know the answer, but I stereotyped. I want to bet that the car that she turned in voluntary repo was a Nissan Altima, because this just screams Altima behavior.
That or something like a Chevy Malibu, like, you know, the last gen of those.
That's true.
But this isn't the license plate game, Doug. We're not guessing cars.
That's right. Okay.
That's for later.
All right. Well, good luck, Kat. You are going to need it.
Nuts for Sticks is a brand celebrating the manual transmission in all its forms. So forget those flappy paddles, because we like shifting ourselves. Check out our fun and funny stick-themed shirts at nutsforsticks.com and save 10% on your order using the discount code SWITCHCAST. That's nutsforsticks.com and use code SWITCHCAST.
A few weeks ago, we talked about we did an in-depth dive on bring a trailer versus P-car market, and not the two auctions specifically so much as does it make sense to relist a vehicle from one auction to the other?
Oh, yeah.
Or really relist it at all.
Because we talked about there's some cars that were kind of like making the rounds. If they didn't meet reserved, didn't sell.
Yep.
Let's try the other one.
Let's try the other online auction. Let's try the other one. Let's try the other one. And in general, we found statistically it did not make sense. However, people are still doing it, and there is a kind of an epic fail example of this in a Ferrari 512 TR on bring a trailer three different times, which is fantastic. Now, I stumbled across this because I was looking in a Ferrari 512 TR in Europe. I really happen to like those vehicles, and I was watching one on the collecting cars auction site over there. I was running comps on Euro 512 TRs in the U.S. because there is a difference in value between Euro cars in the U.S. versus North American spec cars. Sometimes the Euros are worth more, sometimes they're worth less. It depends on the car, the situation, et cetera, et cetera. But in this case, I was looking at one particular comp and I saw a 92 Ferrari 512 TR. I'm sorry, a 92. And it sold for only $176,000, 30,000 kilometers, so like 18,000 miles, and it appeared to be a fairly nice car other than maybe needing some service. It had the Classiche Red Book. That's always a good thing to have. And it sold no reserve for $176,000.
Doug, I need to be on. I need to have a man-to-man talk right now. I have no idea what the market is on a 512 TR. Is that low?
A good U.S. one is like 300 plus.
Oh,
minus.
My gosh.
Yeah.
Holy moly.
Yeah. So a special color, real low miles. Like if you got a collector mile, one could go into the fours. Right. A 512M, which is the further updated and more limited version of the TR, right? So they went Testarossa, 512 TR, F512M. They were all Testarossas, similar, basically the same body with some revisions. The 512 TR was a huge improvement over the Testarossa. It was a different top end to the engine. I think even maybe a different crankshaft. Some Ferrari nerds will correct me there. Revised suspension, brakes. They did revise the body somewhat, updated a lot of things, updated the interior, the wheels. I mean, it was like almost a full redesign of the car without redesigning the car.
You still get that classic look with all the strakes everywhere. These are gorgeous.
Correct.
To the uninitiated, if you parked a 512 TR, a Testarossa, and a Fiero kit car next to each other, they would think they were all the same. But anyway, so we're looking at 512 TRs. I'm going, $176,000. That is way cheap. And then we looked at the top here of the comments, and it turns out that the buyer said, hey, I tried to reach out to the seller multiple times. They never contacted me. Finally, they contacted me and said, we're not going to sell it for the price that we got. And Bring a Trailer confirmed in the comments and said, yep, that is true. The seller did not respond to our outreach and wouldn't complete the deal. So we've cut ties with the seller, and the winner's auction winning fee on their credit card was refunded.
So, like, you know, the buyer's fee is obviously a percentage value of the car, and that's a huge thing if you back out to lose that amount of money.
Correct.
The seller's fee or cost of the listing is nowhere near as high, right?
It's $99 to run a vehicle on Bring a Trailer. So you're out $99 if you decide not to go through with the deal. But you're also banned.
Yeah. I don't know if this user was somebody selling a lot of cars or if that really mattered. But you know.
No, it was their first car ever sold. Yeah, so it really didn't matter. Well, no, it was their third listing for the same car.
Ew.
So here is exactly why this doesn't make sense to do. Okay. So they initially listed it in January of 2024, and it was bid to $225,000.
Closer, still not quite on the market.
Reserve not met. It was listed again in April. It was bid to $198,000. Not content with the declining bids on Bring a Trailer, they went to P-Car Market in, I believe, May. And there it bid into the 170s. I think it actually bid to 176, which was the same number that it sold for this last time. Again, didn't sell, so they took it off the market for quite a while, which is the right thing to do, and then they ran it no reserve, which, again, typically is the right thing to do. Hey, if the car didn't meet reserve, let's run it no reserve. That's what the auction house will tell you. It'll generate interest. It'll get people to – you've already run this car three times. It hasn't sold, so do it no reserve, because then people will go, okay, now I can actually buy the car, and they'll bid to what you want. Well, that backfired.
Significantly.
Significantly.
Yeah. I'm not a mathematician, but it went down like 20 grand every time it was listed on Bring a Trailer.
Yes.
Yikes.
Yes, it did. 27 and then 22. They also didn't take new photos. They literally reused the photos from their first listing, which was almost a year prior. Not great. So, yeah, it was this dealer's first rodeo. And prior to their purchase, it had sold for an undisclosed amount, but the estimate was 150 to 200K euro at an auction over in Europe in 2023. So it's likely that this dealer purchased it in 2023 from this auction house overseas and thought, oh, gee, I'm going to play the arbitrage. I'm going to pick this up for 160K euro, bring it over. They're selling for 300 grand. Didn't realize the euro ones were as big of a discount. Maybe they did, maybe they didn't. But I used Epic VIN, another shameless plug. Not shameless, it's another plug.
We're not even sponsored.
Right. Well, sort of. We do have an affiliate program. So again, if you're researching the history of cars, click the link in the show notes. Check out Epic VIN. You need to have it. It's great because it shows historic listings, even classified listings that you wouldn't be able to find. So you can get some backstories on it. So I was able to find out that in September of 2023, this dealer, it's fcauto.com, put it up for 300 grand. So they went from asking 300 grand. They then lowered the price to 210. In June. Whoa. So that was after the first three failed auctions. But if they had taken the first one at 225, now they're asking 210. Like, you totally missed. There's an old saying, the first bid is the best bid. Or the first offer is the best offer.
Oh,
right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Somebody comes in, it's like, here's the first offer on a house, here's the first offer, whatever. People are like, oh no, wait it out, wait it out. Sometimes the first offer is the best offer. Now, I mean, who knows? There might have been shill bidding. The 225 might not have been legit. We don't know. I did not dissect every single person's bid on there or whatever. But anyway, so we see that they listed it, and then it's still in the photos from current listings at this dealer in Virginia. So it's obvious that this sale didn't go through, which we already know. Which is kind of crappy, right? If you list something no reserve, be ready to sell it, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's what you're saying when you list something no reserve, is it's gone. Right. Whatever it is, it's out.
Right. If you don't like the number, at least do the slightly less shady thing, which is buy it back yourself, pay all the fees, and win the car yourself.
Yeah. Right?
Some people won't agree with that either, but at least it's like, well, I'm paying the consequence of, holy crap, this car tanked. There was no bidders in the room. I'm not going to let this go for way under market. I will just take the hit and I'll pay the 10 grand to buy my own car back. At least you're doing a real transaction, albeit with yourself. It's not a fake one. Like, you're still paying the auction house. Whatever. They didn't do that. Should have sold. I looked at their website, and it's not really surprising that this arbitrage didn't work, because at least from appearances, they're a very pedestrian dealership. It's a lot full of Buicks and Toyotas and, you know, one old Porsche Boxster in the background. But the 512 TR is like, you know, it's the cumulative value of half their inventory in this one car. So it seems like this is kind of an outlier, like one of these things where car dealers would be like, I got my dealer license. I'm going to play around with flipping exotics so I can have them for a bit and look cool and I don't have to pay sales tax and whatever. Like, that's fine to do. It just, this was an experiment gone bad. Now, I did follow up with the dealer. I did call the dealer to get their side of the story.
Okay.
Yes.
Do tell.
Now, the person I talked to was not the manager at the time that this all went down with Bring a Trailer. So this is secondhand information. But according to the representative of FC Auto that I spoke to, the buyer was not ready to consummate the deal, and he had to like move money around or whatever. And so, like, there were some strings attached to the payment. So they blamed the buyer for not completing their end of the transaction.
Which is interesting, because per the comments on Bring a Trailer, there was essentially almost no communication.
Correct. And we deal with this all the time, where people say, hey, I just got approved for financing. It's going to take 4 days. Here's the process. Or I need to pull money out of my money market. It's going to take 2 days for the transfer. We get that. That's understandable. Bring a Trailer
for sure.
Even has policies in place to allow for that. You don't have to wire money the instant you win it. But according to the comments, the buyer tried and tried and tried to reach the dealer, could not reach the dealer. So I'm siding with, I think Bring a Trailer and the buyer were in the right on this one. I think, and this has happened before, where people sell their cars no reserve, don't like the number they got, and just ghost the seller or just say, I'm not going to sell it.
Well, and that's the interesting thing about Bring a Trailer and any other auction site like this, where it's like private parties or dealers listing, and the site's purpose is to bring the market. It's not to handle the payment. You know, I'm pretty sure you buy a car at like a Gooding auction, you can't really walk from, you're not pulling your car out.
No.
Because they're saying, we have this, we've put in the work, it's in this, but you know, the whole business, like,
you're
there is
buying
a structure.
It from Gooding. Gooding is a licensed dealer. They are escrowing, they are middling the transaction.
So I think, like, obviously there's an inherent risk, but I think obviously for the most part, everybody plays ball. That's what, it's beneficial for everybody. Find the car you want, be able to sell the car.
The success rate is very high. People always highlight, oh, well, Bring a Trailer is a sham because, you know, this seller didn't go through. There's shill bidding. There's this, there's that. Very low instances of this. And they do tend to take decisive action when it does occur.
They do. Do you think, Doug, that there should be some sort of a more significant penalty for backing out on a sale?
For the seller.
For the seller.
And that was brought up in the comments as a suggestion. Probably. I think they should authorize the seller's credit card the same way they do the buyer's and say, if you renege on the deal, we're going to charge you. But I think that would be tougher because now you're essentially like charging them a fine. And so you would get into more detailed arbitration of these situations because they are a lot of he said, she said.
For sure. Like that would make it, you'd have to go to court, I think, to resolve
this. Yeah. So I don't think it's worth it for Bring a Trailer. It's not endemic. It's not a big problem. It happens every now and then. And, you know, crappy sellers are going to be crappy sellers, and same thing with buyers. And, you know, they can always dispute the charge on their credit card. And is it really worth all that fight? Probably not. Because if somebody's going to be a shady seller, good luck forcing them to go through with the deal. It's not going to work. They're going to say, okay, well, sue me. It's not worth it.
And all of the rigmarole that Bring a Trailer would have to go through for every other seller who's just there to sell their car and do a good job, that it would be a lot of overhead for a very small percentage of the overall sales.
Correct. Correct. The interesting thing was, though, they said that currently the car is at service at a local performance shop in New Jersey. They're doing the full engine out, major service, new tires, and don't hold them to this, but the dealer FC Auto said that they would be listing it looking to get 210 once all this service was done. Now, an engine out, major service, and tires, if done properly on a Testarossa, is probably $20,000.
Yeah.
So 176 plus 20 is like 196. Maybe they were willing to sell it at 176. Maybe the new manager's better and just doesn't care and wants to move the car. I don't know. Maybe it was the owner's call. You know, again, we're only going off of what we're told, secondhand information. I think what they did was a little shady, and it came from a place of not understanding how the auction process worked and trying to exploit it. But, you know, 210 fully serviced, that's not a terrible deal.
Yeah.
It's really not a terrible deal. Speaking of which, that also confirms our point from last week that importing European cars that are legal here, importing cars from Europe that are already legal here, doesn't really make sense most of the time. There's very little opportunity for arbitrage because this particular 512 TR that I was watching on collectingcars.com that started this whole thing, it was a 50,000 kilometer car, so 30,000 miles, black on black, no service history other than the recent service that it just had, and it sold for £171,000, which I believe is about $208,000 current exchange rates. I would still have to get the car here, which is another, we'll say $15,000 for the sake of argument. So I'm in a European car, 230-ish, 225, landed here, and it's still a Euro car, and I've got all the risk and hassle of bringing it over. And I could buy this red one here for 210 fully serviced, in theory, if they'll sell it for that number. Who knows? They might back out.
Yeah. Well, it's like the rebuild thing we just talked about. Like, sometimes the number that is on the web page that you're looking at or is on the ticket, like, that isn't everything. You need to consider the whole package of what it's going to take.
Yep.
The time and the frustration and whatever else involved, the risk, all that costs money, even if it's not money that leaves your pocket immediately to pay for the car.
Yep. And that quickly, the same thing happened with the Mercedes CLK Black Series this week. Somebody tried the auction arbitrage. A dealer bought it off of Cars and Bids in September for $91,000 plus auction fees. They tried running it on Bring a Trailer, thinking, oh, well, Bring a Trailer is better than Cars and Bids. And arguably, it probably is better marketplace for a car like the CLK 63 Black Series. It only bid to 84. Ooh. So they said, well, screw it. We'll try P car market. Why not do all the auctions? And it bid up today on P car market to buffering $76,000.
Yikes.
Yeah, that didn't work out too well for them. Sorry to say.
God, these are so cool, though.
Yeah, they are. And you can stick shift swap them, too.
Six-speed manual. Can you really?
You can. Might be one of the greatest driver's cars on the planet.
Oh, my God.
But we're moving on to the license plate game. Yes, thanks to Alan Hoover for the suggestion here. This has become a fan favorite. The game is One of us reads a vanity plate, and the other person has to guess what kind of car it's on. How good are we at stereotypes?
Love a good stereotype.
Oh, boy. Here we go. Don't clip that. All right. Here we go. Thank you to all who submitted these. Yeah, keep them coming. All right.
Hit me, Doug. I'm so ready.
Okay. This one, I've got great ones for you this week. This one is from Josh Passante, friend of the podcast. Ohio Plate, Mrs. Stig.
Oh. He also submitted one to me, too. I was afraid you're about to read what he sent me this morning. Anyway, Mrs. Stig. A Macan.
Nope.
Okay. What is it?
Keep guessing. Nope.
You can't. I mean, I'm going to get
you're
it wrong.
Not going to get it.
What is it?
Just guess. Come on.
Like a Mercedes station wagon.
Nope.
A BMW.
Nope. Literally two out of, I told Josh, I'm like, if I had to guess this,
yeah.
You guessed two out of my three guesses. I was going to say Audi station wagon, Mercedes AMG wagon, or a Porsche Macan / Cayenne.
Yeah.
It is a Haltima. It is a Nissan Frontier.
Do you think that Mrs. Stig is not actually referring to what we think it is?
Maybe.
What if that's just her last name?
Maybe. Yeah, it's possible. Or maybe Mr. Stig took the advice on our video, which is don't influence your wife's car buying decision. Just let her buy what she wants. Don't try to make her a car person.
Or that's just another reasonably priced car that we didn't get that season over here or something. It was some bonus content.
Yes. Yes.
Yikes. Alrighty, the from me also from Josh, friend of the podcast, Aviator, AV8EER.
That's a Travis Bell, Celebrity Machines, hates it when people put things after the number eight, like a T or whatever, and it's like, no, the T's already there. AV8ER.
Yeah, it's
just
already
put the
in there.
R. Just put the R.
Doug, you're stalling.
Lincoln Aviator.
No.
Dang.
Honda Civic. There's no reason it doesn't make any sense.
Well, no, he's probably a pilot. He flies.
Oh, yeah, I guess. But yeah, the E's are already in there. All right, hit me.
Oh, gosh. Oh, man. Because you gave me an 8-1, I have to...
Oh, no.
All right, here's one. Renegade. So it's R-E-N-E-G-8-D. I read it as renegated.
Yeah, renegated. Is it like a gated manual swap Jeep Renegade?
No.
No. That's got to be on like a Charger.
It's a Corvette C7.
Yes. No wonder it doesn't make sense. That's a boomer plate.
It pisses me off, though, because it's renegade, renegated. It's not gated. No. Put it on a...
So this next one, I saw with my own eyeballs, late, it's another 8, L8, night, N-Y-T-E.
Is the car black?
No, it wasn't.
Did they have party plates?
No.
Did they have like a lot
not.
Of DUIs? That's why it's
no.
late night. Are they a vampire?
Well, they might have been, actually.
I'm stalling again.
I don't think you're going to guess it.
Infinity sedan.
No. White Ford Explorer.
Dumb.
It's so dumb.
I don't understand
why you would even get late night on a plate.
I don't know. All right. I love this one. Okay. I'm putting on the sunglasses for this one because there's a story.
It's not Aviator,
behind
is
the
it?
Answer. No, behind the answer. If you get it, I'll tell you the story.
Okay.
I'm a flirt.
Well, I knew that already, Doug. No. That's definitely on an Altima.
No.
No. or an Escape, a Ford Escape.
No.
Ah. What is it?
Hummer H2.
Really?
Rare H2, yes.
Oh.
Yes. And
what are the shapes?
There's
then?
A plate surround that, well, it's the one about, you know, like don't tailgate. If you're going to tailgate, then, you know, pull my hair.
Oh.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of those lately. I've seen them all over the place.
Yeah.
Everybody's just very
charged. Say they are a flirt. But anyway, so
wouldn't
the reason I have these
flirting,
terrible sunglasses, ladylike sunglasses, is I once took in on trade a Hummer H2 that had a sticker on the back window that said, "Life is short, drive a Hummer naked." Damn. And it was a lady who traded it in, and these are her sunglasses that
she
left in the Hummer.
Well, she wasn't naked then. It lied. The sticker lied. All right, I've got a submission here from the Instagrams. Thank you very much. Camry V8.
Lexus.
There's a few of those.
I know. I'm trying to think which 400 Lexus I'm going to guess.
Ethan, while he's stalling over here, we're going to need to get one of those chess timers.
Well, no. If it's Camry. I mean, like LS430?
It is an IS500. A brand new one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, that makes more sense because it's the same body. Or
is it? I was kind of wondering.
Well, an LS definitely isn't. It's a big body rear-wheel drive, but that's all
I can
think of.
No, and it's in this, they sent me a photo. It's in this gorgeous blue color, too. So, ooh, hot.
At least I had Lexus.
You did. I was very impressed.
All right, last one for you. This one comes with a great story. This is like a wall of shame, shrewd negotiator all in one. Paid off Florida plate.
That is a... like a 10-year-old Jag.
No.
No.
It is a 2020 Nissan Versa.
Oh.
And here's the bay part of this.
How did nobody else
It's have? Not paid off.
What did you check?
There is... No, somebody else did, and I verified it. There is an electronic title with an electronic lien... the lien holder is Capital One Auto Finance, which
is amazing.
Typically pretty high interest rate financing. Oh,
I can't follow that
up.
Yes. That's amazing.
Now, a lot of people in the comments allege you have to take your title in. They paid it off, but they didn't. And it's like, no, electronic title with electronic lien. If you pay it off, the lien holder submits a request to the system. And it shows up. It's not in there anymore.
Yep, that's how that works.
Somebody ran in the Florida DMV. There is a lien on it as of today.
Wow.
And I checked Carfax, and as of June or July, whenever the registration renewed, it said loan or lien reported. So yeah.
Nice.
Yep.
Owned. That was amazing.
Self-owned.
Oh.
That should be their new plate. Now, what it probably was right there, Nissan, is their corrupt government people or something, and they got paid off to do something. They're saying, I really like taking bribes. They're just advertising that, I'm open
for business in my Versa.
Open for bribeness.
Bribeness.
This episode is brought to you by Sheffield All Sport Watches. The Sheffield brand was recently revived by Jay Turkbus, an owner of an original Sheffield All Sport diver he received from his parents in 1970 when he was just 11, beginning his love of watches. As an adult, Jay used his extensive expertise in product development and marketing to revive the brand that started it all. He set out to develop watches with a high level of quality and specification at a value price. His first effort, and a successful one in July of 2023, was the debut of the Sheffield All Sport Diver 1. It had the kind of build and movement that much more expensive watches use, and his debut price of $108 was equivalent to the $13 his parents paid back in 1970. Since that debut, Sheffield has expanded to a wider range of automatics and chronos, many designed around vintage Sheffield dials of the 60s. The Sheffield well of clever and unique design remains his inspiration, as well as maintaining the goal of high quality, very affordable range of automatic and quartz watches. Sheffield watches, value on merit, not just price. I love mine. Get yours at SheffieldWatches.com and mention that you heard about them on Switchcast.
It's been a while since we've had a proper Doug rant.
Oh,
but
really? Buckle
I
up, everybody.
Hit a point this week where I just decided I am officially done with low mileage cars. I'm totally over the whole thing.
Okay.
It started with an email I got from a dealer. Good dealer. I'm not hating on the dealer, right? Don't hate the player, hate the game. A Porsche 993 Turbo S.
Pretty hot car.
Awesome. Expensive car. One of my childhood dream cars. The first time I saw a 993 Turbo in the flesh, I lost my mind. 92 miles on it.
Oh, that's really
$2.7 million is the asking price. And I just got like internally angry at that. I'm like, that's stupid. It's just dumb. It's dumb. You can buy a good one for $500,000. You can buy a great one for $750,000.
Okay.
And the best one in the world. Why is it the best one in the world? Because it only has 92 miles on the odometer. Well, how do you know? You could have disconnected. Like, who cares? I officially was just like, I'm done. I don't care. I hate this whole thing of like low mile cars are worth more and you should put them away. And people are putting away new cars and people are trying to drive up the value of these cars. And there's all these collections of perfect, untouched low mileage cars that have never been driven. And I'm like, who cares? I don't care anymore. Now, I recognize in saying this that I am becoming the boomer that all of us rant against because they're just like, oh, well, I remember I could bought that car for cheap. All these people driving up the values. I can't afford it. I'm on a fixed income.
Ooh, where'd Hank go? Can we let him in the door?
But I'm there. Like, these are cars I've wanted to own since I was a kid. And yes, I am too poor. I am upset that there are people out there with more money than I have that can buy it. And I am that person that's like, well, I'm a better enthusiast than they are because.
Mm-hmm.
Which I've always said, no, that's not a valid argument. If somebody has more money, it doesn't matter if they're a better enthusiast or no more. It does not matter, right? I can't expound to you the internal movements of my Rolex, let alone our wonderful sponsor, Sheffield Watch. But I like wearing them.
Nice.
And some people would say, well, you don't deserve to have a Rolex because you don't know about the brand history and all this crap. I'll admit it. I don't.
But you can like it. I mean, I feel I'm all for a little bit of gatekeeping, but I'm not sure if that's necessarily how we should do it. But Doug, okay. When did the 993 Turbo come out?
1996.
That was 29 years ago?
Something like that.
Really long time.
Yes.
I think we can all say that we would love to experience what it would be like to be in that car brand new. And the only way that you can do that is if you have enough coin, which is a significant amount of coin, but there's like a handful of 993 turbos left with low enough miles that it's practically new.
But what about it being brand new do we want to experience?
Well, of course, the driving, but the smells and the feels.
There you go. No, we want to experience it brand new because we want to experience the memory. We want to be able to jump in a car at the dealership, take it out new because it's new because it's relevant. It's interesting. It's this just came out. I want a new one, not because I want a low mileage one. I want to go drive it and not new anymore.
But nobody else has like their sweat hasn't gotten into the steering wheel and they haven't like, you know, misshift a couple of times. It is like brand new.
So restore one.
Which you could do, but it's not going to be the same. The leather's not going to be the same. The seats are going to be a little different because the materials aren't the same.
The average person buying a $2.7 million 993 Turbo, I would opine, does not and cannot tell the difference.
Can they be called
average? They have advisors. They probably don't even look at the car half the time because they're too busy making the kind of money that it requires to own a 993 Turbo for $2.7 million because they have 17 other ones.
That could be true. That is a significant amount of money. That is an eye-watering amount of money. But honestly, if I had the money and I could buy, the car I won't shut up about, a 996 GT3, if I could buy one with like 5 miles on it, brand new, close enough to the spec that I would like, even though it's, you know, we're now 20 years past, I'd be tempted because nobody else has messed with it.
Yeah, but you might have to then restore it because it would need new. Yes, it would need tires. It would need window seals. It would need coolant hoses. It would need fluids and fluids and fluids and engine seals. Like new, old new is not what it's cracked up to be.
But it's. I think it's more about the drive from a driving experience perspective. I agree with you. You're going to have to replace stuff that's been replaced. It's better to have something used. But from a tactile experience of existing in the space of this car, it can't be the
same.
But
could you actually do it without the neuroticism that comes with that of getting your first stone chip? Or crossing the 10,000 mile mark and going, oh my gosh, I just made this car worthless. Because that's all people think about. I get messages from people all the time and it makes me sad. It makes me sad for these people because they message me, this happened this week. I love my car, but because it's low miles and perfect and the value went up, I can't drive it. I'm scared to drive it because it's too perfect. It's too valuable. The actual act, the phenomenon of cars becoming more appreciated by more people has taken the joy away from the very people who want to enjoy them.
But if I had that kind of money, I wouldn't care because I'm not buying it to some of these people
but
might buy this as an investment.
Exactly.
Some of them might. But the type of person with that kind of cash who... I'm a little envious of that, not because they have millions of dollars, but because they can have this experience from brand new. And if they get the first rock chip, they're the ones that did it. They're making memories.
But they're not actually doing that.
They might be, though.
You don't know. 1/10 of 1% of these people that are buying these cars are actually going out and enjoying them as intended. They are parking them. The cars with these low miles, and the reason they don't need all that maintenance that you would need to do to go drive it is because of people buying a 150 mile whatever insert 30-year-old vehicle here are not going to put any miles on it, and they're going to sell it to the next guy who wants a 150 mile car and the next guy that wants a 150 mile car because it's about an investment.
Well, sure. I mean, that's a ton of money to tie up in a thing, but I think, you know, it's what if they want it as a piece of art?
Okay.
What if they want to just sit there and look at it? This is unblemished. This is perfect. This is as it was. This is a time capsule. Because we've talked a lot, Doug, that the era of cars that we love is gone. We can drive them now, but they're not coming out new. We're not excited by too much that's coming out. I like the new GT3s and the Mustang GTD is awesome. I can't afford it. Not even close. But like there's some cool things. But by and large, the driving experience you and I want is not being made as common as it was, and it looks to be going away. So don't you dream a little bit of just this time?
I mean, that's all the more reason we should drive the cars that we can't. But okay, to your point of the art thing, I recognize, and again, back to don't hate the player, hate the game. I don't fault anyone who has a collection of low mileage cars if they do that from an art perspective, right? I have a good client who has a massive collection of some of the most amazing cars you can imagine. And some of them are the most low mileage, perfect, like new cars on the planet. Other ones have incredible race provenance. And ironically, the ones that are the most valuable, both in his collection and in the world, are not 0 mile cars. They are the ones that got beat up on the racetrack. The most valuable cars on the world are the ones that got used properly. But he appreciates them from a perspective of art. But unlike art on the wall, these cars have engines. They're made to move and they're made to sound good and they're made to go somewhere. And like cars as art, you're only getting a partial enjoyment of what they were designed to do. And when they get used, not only do you get the full enjoyment out of it, but other people do because they get to experience them moving in motion, to see all the angles, to see the presence on the road, to hear them. Like,
I think that when a car is totaled and turned into a cube, it doesn't exist anymore. It's off the market. We consider it lost. If a car has 10, 20, 100, 500 miles, we should probably consider it the same, because for the people that you're talking about, it's not in the market anymore. It's in the market for people who would buy $1 million paint or multi-million dollar paintings and other pieces of art. It just doesn't exist. Unless that one person who, God, it'd be such a good experience to buy like a 90-mile car and take it to like 50.
If
like an old GT3 or like some, just something.
If I like you, if I had unlimited money, I would go out and buy the lowest mile, most perfect examples of cars that I want and then beat the snot out of them, like the tax the rich style.
Yeah.
But sick. The problem is I'd be angry that I wouldn't want to pay the premium to people who are speculating on these and driving the values up. So I probably wouldn't actually do it. I'd want to do it to make everybody else, all the purists, angry. Like, you're ruining that car. And it's like, for whom? Not for me. I'm making it awesome for me.
Making memories.
Yeah.
Just like the people with this amount of money want to do with the cars they're buying.
But what about the cars that suck, right? Or aren't that good, right? So there was a 80s square body Blazer with like 125 miles that sold last year for six figures.
Yikes.
For an 80s square body Blazer. Car was never good. That truck was never good. There's no driving experience. There's nothing pretty about it. There's nothing. Like, literally, the only thing the guy can say is, look how few miles are on there. Come look at the odometer. Come look at this little thing, this little gauge in the car. That's what makes it worth.
I think to them, that's probably closer to an art type experience. They have some memory. They have some tie, some nostalgia for this. I have spent so much money on nostalgia from things from my childhood, video games and getting the best picture quality out of stuff. And I'm a use it type person, but still, they could have some crazy nostalgia for that.
Nostalgia is a hell of a drug.
I spent $200 on a piece of cardboard because it had the 98 pace car on it. You're damn right it's a heck of a drug.
Here's the thing, though. Here's some of the more practical problems. Apart from being angry about the fact that I am getting priced out of the market for so many of these cars because the speculators are driving them up in value, is that, like, the miles can be manipulated, right? I understand that people are buying low mileage cars because they want a quote unquote new car, but it's only new if it's new in condition. So one, you could just restore a car with a ton of miles and make it new, but there's untold numbers of 80s and 90s cars and earlier that had the odometers replaced or rolled back or tampered with because it was so easy. It was so easy. The Porsche 993 in question that we're talking about, I am not a mechanic. I'm handy, but I'm not a mechanic. I can unplug the odometer in less than 3 minutes. Mm. You pull the thing out, literally no tools. I mean, you need like a little help getting the seal out and you know, getting a grip on it.
Oh, for like the gauge?
The gauge, yeah. Gotcha. You pull the gauge out, you unplug it and back, and you push the gauge back in. That's it.
Hmm.
So, like, all these people buying low-mile cars, the more the values go up, the more likely you're getting scammed. Because when you see a multiple of value, not just a premium, not like, oh, well, a regular 993 turbo is 400K, a collector mile one is 450. When you see a multiple of value for these low-mile cars, all of a sudden, it's rife with scams.
Well, it's like we said earlier.
Look, I just discovered this 500-mile Ferrari F40. Why does it look like it's been raced for, you know, 30 years? No, it's
how just how they made them back then.
Yeah. And there's the old saying, right? It's only original once. But like half the stuff on these cars isn't original anyway. A lot of cars were painted or repainted before they left the factory or before they got new to the dealer. I bought a 1980 Porsche one time from the original owner. He did not know until I told him, based on what I could see, that the entire car had been repainted poorly. It had been repainted at port before it came to the dealer. This happens a lot. A lot.
Interesting. I mean, I would say if Porsche themselves repainted it, not like a dealer, then I'd be all right. It's might as well be how it came from the factory. But at port, if somebody's sitting out there with a rattle can, that's a bit yikes.
Yeah. Another crazy transaction that blew my mind recently. You talk about nostalgia. It's hitting hard in the 90s cars. A Honda CRX SI with 326 miles sold at Barrett Jackson for $65,000.
Our buddy John Sabo get in there? He wants a perfect CRX?
No, he didn't.
What?
He sent that to me. And I'm just like, that That doesn't make any sense. There's no world in which that car is worth 65 grand.
People with money who are nostalgic for a time.
But is it nostalgia, or is it that they think this is a good investment and they're buying it because they think somebody else will pay more sometime in the future?
I mean, if they're
getting in on this game of like, okay, well, if they keep going up in value, I'll keep this pyramid scheme going. As long as somebody else will pay me more for it in the future, I'm okay with paying this number. If you told the guy who bought that CRX SI for 65 grand that it was going to depreciate just the same as him buying it new, right? If you want to talk about nostalgia, let's talk about the nostalgia of depreciation. You go buy a brand new car for 65 grand. 5 years later, it's worth 30. If you told him his CRX SI would be worth 30 when he goes to sell it, do you think he would have paid 65?
I don't know his motivations. I can't tell you. We got this guy fired up over here. Look at this. His blood's a boiling.
I can tell you because I deal with these people all the time. And I will admit, this is like, I'm like a drug dealer turned state's witness here, because I've made a lot of money off of people buying low mile collector cars, whatever, rare, one of this, one of that. I will say, in my defense, I have not perpetuated that in the sense that I've sold it as a, well, this will go up in value, this is a good investment. I've never, ever, ever done that. I've, you know, said this car is perfect, this car might be rare based on the facts, but I've not pushed people on it as investments. And in fact, when people ask me about, should I buy this car, is it going to go up in value? I'm like, wrong question, I'm about to hang up on you. No, we're not talking about that.
It is a little bit like Walter White starting up a DARE program, though. Let's be honest.
I like this quote. This came to me from Instagram. I apologize. I hope you're listening. The person who said this, they like shared it as a story. They shared one of my stories. And then quoted this, and I screenshot it, but didn't show me who shared it, whatever. I'm so sorry, I can't give you credit. All I will say is this is not my original. This is what he says, talking about like special rare cars, whatever, low mileage cars. Quote, it reminds me of the transitive property whereby my car is special, therefore I am special. If you're only into cars as an investment or display of financial success, you're not really into cars, you're into money. Mm. That is how I feel about so many of the people buying these 0 mile cars. I don't want to, I am questioning people's motivations, right? But I know a lot of great people who have these types of collections, but I don't really think they're car people. I don't think they're really into cars. I'm sorry. I like them. I'm happy for them that they have the money and they have the cars. But I think this holds true. This sums up how I feel, is that you're not really into cars. You're into money. If you're really into cars, you would be okay with your entire value of your collection going to zero. And you let me phrase that a different way. If you were okay with your entire collection going to zero and you still loved it, then you are a car guy. Mm. Then I don't care if you want to own all the low mile cars in the world. I don't care, because I feel like you're owning them for the right reasons. But if you were bent on these cars have to keep their value for me to keep my interest, you're into money, not cars. I'll finish with a quote.
Another one?
Yes. I think this is Jerry Seinfeld's quote, and he said most aptly, he who dies with the most miles wins.
Yes. I was listening to one of the podcasts where he said that. I don't know if it was the first time or if you just quoted it again, but I was like, yeah, he's got some pretty all right opinions about car enjoyment. Anyway, on to the props and flops, as always brought to you by Switch Cars. And Switch Cars is the enthusiast dealership where we buy, sell, and consign only cars that we like ourselves. Check out our handpicked inventory at switchcars.com and be sure to mention Switchcast for special pricing. Find more information at switchcars.com or come visit our showroom in beautiful Twinsburg, Ohio. Doug, do we have the pick of the week?
We do. It's a 2006 Porsche Cayman S, cobalt blue over gray interior just for you. Sport seats. And it's a future collectible with only 350 miles on it. Just kidding. It has 35,000 miles.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, so it's been driven some and ready to be driven more. Our flop of the week. No, let's go to prop of the week first. The flop of the week is too awesome. prop of the week. The Corvette ZR1, the new ZR1 pricing has been announced. The base MSRP is around $175,000 for the coupe and $185,000 for the convertible, which sparked the ire of some Corvette curmudgeons. Not surprisingly, one guy said, "I can't believe it's 10 grand for the convertible. It probably cost 1500 for them to make that. In all reality, what are they?" I'm like, yes, it doesn't cost him 175 to make the Corvette either, you dumb friggin'. Yes, they make a profit.
Is this the first generation that you can get a convertible ZR1? I feel like that goes against the ethos of what the ZR1 should be.
This is the prop of the week, Tyler.
Oh, I'm sorry. I misread the flop.
No.
Flop of the week is Corvette deciding to put a convertible on the ZR1.
No, I don't mind it. I don't mind it, right? I like drop tops. So anytime a sports car manufacturer can make their Halo supercar in a spider version, I love it, especially if it's not like compromising on chassis rigidity and they can make it like equally as awesome as the coupe and not take away from the sports carness. But anyway, I just think it's awesome. Corvette once again is moving the bar. One article referred to it as America's hypercar, which a long time ago, people didn't even want to refer to it as a sports car. Well, it's not a real sports car. Europeans better. Then it was a supercar, I think, with a C6 ZR1. Oh, it's not a real supercar, you know, but it would beat all the million-dollar supercars. Now they're calling it a hypercar, which I think is a dumb made-up term anyway. But it's over 1,000 horsepower. It's mid-engine. It's twin turbo. It will undoubtedly beat all of its competitors on the Nürburgring, and it's only $175,000.
But it's not a hypercar.
Well, no, there is no such thing as a hypercar, but it's a supercar for sure. America's supercar, $175,000. Now, like, one, that's the same dollar value as the current ADM on a 2024 GT3 RS. So literally, nice. Just you're paying a Corvette ZR1 on top of the MSRP to get a GT3 RS. Not like anyone will actually get a ZR1 a sticker for the next 2 years, but it's a nice
thought.
I do
wonder where those will land compared to the GT3 RS.
I bet they'll be 250-ish.
For like a while.
So like 75K over sticker. Maybe 100 for the first.
Whew. It's a spicy vet.
Spicy vet.
They could have a one with stickers. It's purple for a lot cheaper than that.
Hank would be in here going, "No, I'm not paying those greedy Steelership markups. I'll just wait 3 years. It'll be 50 grand under sticker, just like the Z06.
Okay,
goodness. Hank, wait 3 years.
Is it time for the real flop of the
week? Flop of the week. This submission comes from Jay Roberts, Gonzo Prius. He sent us a photo of a pricing sticker from a Toyota. Let's see. A Toyota BZ4X. MSRP $46,638. And of course, the dealer adds the car security system $995, window tint $595, diamond ceramic $995, Expel premium shield $595, and catalytic converter protection $495.
How do they protect the cats?
I think it's like buying, they're paying off. Like that Nissan Versa guy with the paid-off plate, they're paying off the criminals.
Just goes to the local gang.
It's the mob. Like, hey, don't. Yeah, that's protection.
The cat gang.
Protection. I got you protection for
hey, this $95. Toyota Bia. What the heck is it?
BZ4X.
Whatever that
it's
is.
It's an EV.
Oh. Doug, I don't think that has cats. I don't. What?
Exactly.
What? Can't. Ethan, pull the plug. We're done. We can't. That's it. Oh. I fell for that, too. You knew this was happening. Oh, God. I'm just going to leave. That's fine. Cheers, everybody.
Thank you for joining us for Switchcast with Doug Tabbitt and Tyler Sanders, produced by Ethan Huffnagel. Switchcast is an automotive entertainment and opinion show and nothing we say should be taken very seriously. We do not give tax, investment, legal, emotional, or professional advice, and the only licenses we hold are driver's licenses. The opinions expressed on this show are exclusively held by the people pontificating at that moment and do not reflect the values of our producers or sponsors. Our theme music is provided by Emily and Ivory. You can stream their full album on Spotify or SoundCloud. If you like this show, you can stream it in its entirety on your favorite audio podcast platform. Check out switchcast.live for more info.